Welcome to another amazing sport and lifestyle biz here on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio. We've got a good one for you this week, everyone. An interview that was highly sought after. Sam Thomas, head coach of Presimpia College's girls soccer team, telling us all about how he's settled into the job, how he recruits players, the players he's looking for. And it's not just about making them footballers. It's about making them good, grounded, amazing human beings. Look out for a massive part one here from Sam, which will start straight after this intro. Also, we've got some adverts. Please listen out to them for some amazing products. And also, our SLB Sports Roundup that will wind up the show. We really hope you enjoy it. You'll never stop this, but I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your son. Well, ladies and gentlemen, back with us today after a really, really well-received interview a few weeks ago. It's a good friend. It's Samuel Thomas, all the way from Principia College in America. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. How are you?
Really, really well, thank you. Appreciate you giving your time up on a Sunday. I know your schedule at this moment and for the last few weeks has been absolutely rammed. How are you in yourself?
I'm good. It's a good kind of busy. It's, you know, staying busy with all the things that I enjoy, connecting with recruits and watching football and, you know, working towards building our roster this year and next. So it's the kind of busy that gives you energy instead of sapping it of you. So no complaints here.
Fantastic. And it is generally always good to be busy.
Most times, yeah. I will say, at the end of the season, sometimes it's nice when that break comes and you can just, you know, just sit on the couch for 3 or 4 days and decompress. But every other time, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, fabulous. So just to put everyone in the picture, the ones that weren't listening first time round, you're a head soccer, or as we call it in the UK, football coach at Principia College after working your way up. And you've actually managed to find yourself back at the college that you graduated from yourself. And you took that over this year and you are looking to recruit girls from America and also internationals. We got to the stage where you'd just taken on the role, you were just doing the move. If you could, without too fine a detail, because we're going to come into different things, just tell us how the last few weeks have gone for you and how you've settled in.
Yeah, it's been good. You know, something that is going to be part of any transition in the college game over here is getting to know your new school and how the things work within the recruiting process. So every school is different. Every level and division is different. And so even though I went here, obviously being on the coaching side versus the player side, there's a lot of those fine details that I'm refamiliarizing myself with and learning. And so as we've been getting recruits through the door and having conversations and doing our campus tours and getting students applied and accepted and all that kind of stuff, it's been a constant learning curve. Every day I'm picking up something new about how our process is different or unique or special or advantageous or, you know, all these different steps. So a lot of progress and a lot of learning along the way. And fortunately, there's a fantastic staff of other coaches here who, you know, I can lean on for advice or shortcuts or help. And then people in and around our school, whether it's the admissions department or the financial aid department, we're surrounded by good people. So it's been busy, but it's been full of learning and settling in, which is wonderful and really a hands-on way to get to know everyone in your school and your department is being under the gun at this point in time. So it's been good.
Brilliant. Well, that's lovely to hear. Absolutely fabulous to hear. Nice to hear that you've settled in. I imagine you had that fair amount of comfort from the start. I'm sure it changed in certain areas, but you felt at home there because you'd graduated from there. So, as I said, you had just started, you'd just done the move. First of all, you've gone into a head coach role. What is the differences to the importance of the job you're now doing?
So, previous to this job, I've had two different types of styles of head coaching responsibilities. First, about 6 years ago, I got an interim head coaching role. A coach had left just before a season started, and there was an athletic director who was scrambling to find someone who was available. And so I was available, and I took that job for, I think it was about 5.5 months through the season and through the postseason. And that was very instructive for me because it taught me everything that I didn't know about being a football coach, being a head coach. That was very eye-opening and was helpful for the 5 seasons which followed, where I went back to being a full-time assistant coach. Then I could observe my head coaches, ask questions, you know, get my badges and licenses and learn, you know, having gone through the experience and knowing where I was falling short or things that I was completely oblivious to that I discovered. That was a very helpful learning process to setting me up to being a head coach again. And then at my previous school, before Principia, I was a head coach for 2 seasons, but they were COVID seasons. So it was very different. There were very different challenges that we were facing. There were a lot of challenges about physical health, mental health, family matters, family health. Academic success was a huge part of the conversation because for a lot of students, they were transitioning from in-person classes to online courses. Their routine of go to class, go to library, go to the dorm, go to the library, however their routine was set up, it all got flipped. So demand and priorities of coaches were very, very different at that window than maybe they're starting to come back to now. And so there's a lot of familiarity, like you mentioned, with going back to a school that I graduated from. But there's also familiarity in returning to a little bit more of a normal set of coaching responsibilities. There's still going to be residual pieces from carryovers of COVID into now, and those are valuable skills that I think a lot of coaches were exposed to and learned at that time. But yeah, so now we're transitioning and learning here as opposed to other schools. Some of the things I'm discovering, because this is my first time coaching Division III, I've previously coached Division I, Division II, NAIA, which is a completely separate athletics association from the NCAA. I coached in all those areas and levels. And so transition to Division III, I'm exposed to different things and learning different things about this level and our conference and our school. So, the learning's been nonstop, but when you're around a profession long enough, I feel like you start to pick up those things quicker and quicker each year. They might be different, but, you know, familiar in a way. So figuring out the shortcuts, figuring out what works and what doesn't, it's all part of the process, and hopefully 1 year on from my start date, everything is grooved and smooth and rocking and rolling.
Well, lovely to hear. Thank you for the detailed description. Even though you'd been in the job before, it was during COVID or on relief because somebody had left. Now you've got your own role, so obviously you have to make all the decisions and the buck sort of stops with you. What position were you in as a team or as a unit when you took over? And is it quite a big job or sometimes quite easy to start again, if that makes sense?
I would not say it's easy to start again. So it was a big job. The program was not in a good way with regards to results on the field. Results off the field with regards to the academic success of the students, the graduation rates, and the team culture and chemistry, those were all fantastic. And it's wonderful to step into environment and not have to put out fires everywhere. So the team was in good shape off the field for a lot of reasons. But on the field, we didn't have great numbers on our team. So it meant that the team wasn't very competitive deep into games. We would fatigue and get tired. And with regards to competitive quality of players, we have a good competitive quality of players. We just need more. And so this spring, we only had a couple weeks of training before the team went on summer vacation. So our team itself was only able to grow and learn and compete in so many limited ways before they all essentially went home for summer holiday. But the big growth in our team that I saw in the spring was in mentality on the field. They had a willingness to learn, a willingness to be challenged, a willingness to take on new things and evolve a style of play. And that's very, very exciting. And that's all you ask for as a coach, is coachability out of your players, for them to be receptive. And it takes trust. It takes them trusting you to provide them with useful and productive information, and a trusting relationship on us as coaches to understand that if we give them something, that they will do it as asked. So we saw great results. We had a type of round robin jamboree. I don't know if that's a familiar thing over in the UK, but it's a pretty common thing over here, where in off seasons, regardless of sports, you'll maybe have four or five different schools, and you'll play like a half of a game against three or four different teams. So you just kind of play and take a break, play and take a break. So you get lots of little games in against opponents. So we got a lot of little looks, and we competed very, very well against some regional teams, and that was very exciting. So then the biggest changes for us now over summer are in who we're able to bring in to add to the team, to add to our culture, to add to our style, to add to our football impact on the field. So that's been the challenge for the last however many 4 or 5 weeks, really, has been finding available players and sharing our school with them, whether we have their academic interests or not, whether we are the right size of school they're looking for or not, sharing my coaching philosophy and playing philosophy, and if that's something that they resonate with or not. And in that group, the ones who respond positively to our environment, then getting them on campus, getting them applied to our school and accepted, you know, putting together the financial packages that can make our school affordable for those families. That's been the last couple of weeks. So it's an ongoing process, and it will be ongoing until the first day we kick a ball in August. And all of that is just mid-process right now. So nothing is over the line with regards to that. And so that's why I'm still busy, because until we get those players over the line, we can't be assured that we will have taken the next step in our offseason. So, but that's the fun work. That's the part where you're dealing with young adults. If they're still high school students, they're 16, 17, 18 years old. If they're transfer students, maybe they're 18, 19, 20 years old. And you're getting to know these people. You're getting to know these families, their professional interests, their academic passions, their athletic priorities. And that relationship building part of the process is really, really fun. And it's foundational for everything that you hope follows. So good kind of busy.
It's not quite as easy, is it, as just finding the right player? Just give us an idea of how many colleges stroke universities stroke opportunities there are for girls who want to further just in soccer, you know. I mean, yeah, it must be a head scratcher.
Yeah, so I have to go online and look up what the actual number is.
Right.
But the breakdown is you essentially have three different associations within which there's college soccer structures. So the first one is the NCAA, which a lot of people are familiar with. If that's March Madness or college football, that is all under the NCAA umbrella. Then you have the NAIA, which is similar to the NCAA, but different. It's kind of a breakoff of the NCAA for schools who don't want to operate under the same strict rules and regulations that the NCAA holds. So there's a whole set of schools in the NAIA. And then you have junior colleges. So NCAA and NAIA schools are all four-year institutions. Junior colleges, they are two-year institutions. So that's where students can go for 2 years, and they can get a lot of their undergraduate classes taken. But you only get an associate's degree, which sets you up to then take your following 2 years at a four-year program and graduate with your bachelor's degree. And so there's a whole subset of schools that are junior colleges, which are all very competitive and offer good scholarships as well. But they're all first and second year college students. They're all freshmen and sophomores. So within the NCAA, I believe there are around 360 Division I schools. I believe there are an equivalent number of Division II schools. And I believe there are more, maybe about 380 to 400 Division III schools. So within the NCAA alone, you're talking 1,000 schools. Yeah. I would guess between NAIAs and junior colleges, you're talking another 600 to 800 schools. So anytime I, as a coach, am recruiting a kid, there's a possible other 1,800 options for them out there. Now, what helps narrow things down is geographical location, cost, school size, area of study. You know, some schools don't have scholarships and funding. Some schools don't have certain degrees. And so it's not as though every school is on the table for every recruit. And same thing with the divisions. You know, if a player is playing for the U.S. national team, they're going to go play at a Division I school. Their odds of playing for a Division II or Division III school are probably non-existent. Otherwise, if you've got a player who hasn't played soccer year-round and isn't looking to play after their college career, they probably aren't going to go to a Division I program. They might not be the caliber of footballer that that coach is looking for. So there's ways to take that huge number and narrow it down to something much less daunting for the recruit and much less competitive for us as coaches. But whatever school parameters that a student is considering, there are going to be a dozen or a couple dozen schools that might tick most of those boxes. So that's who you ultimately end up recruiting against.
You could provide the perfect opportunity for the perfect candidate, and it's very likely that many, many other colleges may offer the similar or better package.
That is exceptionally true. And yeah, that is why, as a coach, it's really advantageous to be at a program that can tick a lot of those meaningful boxes. You know, the meaningful boxes for many recruits are going to be financial, geographical, and the combination of academic, athletic. So the biggest box for most recruits and families is financial. College in America nowadays is the most expensive it's ever been.
Wow.
And that's an area where our school is incredibly competitive. Without getting into specifics, we are very, very competitive, which as a coach, it's a wonderful feeling. It means that I know when I go into a recruiting conversation, I can comfortably be confident in that we will stack up well against other schools. So that's a huge one. Geographical is another one. We're centrally located.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
In order for a student to get a similar geographical experience, they would have to go hours to hours away to Chicago or Kansas City or Indianapolis. And so within a certain geographical bubble, yes, we're competitive against the other schools in that bubble, but we offer unique things within that bubble. And so that's, you know, another consideration as well, where we have a distinct advantage. And then the academics and athletics piece is, you know, kind of for a lot of people, that's the final big point, where we offer incredibly competitive academic programs. And our athletics programs have, you know, a tradition of being nationally ranked on and off at times. And hopefully, looking to build upon that and strengthen that, our school has made a lot of investment in recent years in making that a more consistent and traditional thing, where instead of it being a come-and-go environment, it becomes a steady expectation. So that's where, as a coach, when you're applying for certain jobs, there's parameters that a lot of coaches might look for that can give you a competitive edge in that recruiting conversation. Because ultimately, how good your team performs in the field is going to come down to the caliber of players you're able to recruit. And a huge piece of that also is the caliber of people that you're able to have on your team. And being able to be in the room for all those conversations and have a seat at the table with all those recruits helps you cast a wider net. And so that's something I love specifically about the school I'm at now. And I've been very lucky to predominantly work at those kinds of schools in the past. And yeah, it's been a fortunate part of my journey. I'm grateful for it.
Brilliant. Thank you again for such a detailed and an amazing response. So obviously the recruitment process is now starting for the next term. You do look to recruit some international players as well. How do you do that? Is there like a marketplace where you put on what you're looking for?
I wish.
Yeah. Are you reliant on perhaps the overseas ones finding you and applying? And one other thing I was thinking was, I presume you have to almost pick your side or your squad to what you need. So obviously, as you start filling the spaces up, the need for a certain position may become greater or may become less. What would happen if you had enough strikers and you come across a striker that you thought was an amazing player? Would you say we have to get her and find some to do with her or shuffle the team about? Or basically, do you just say, right, I need X amount of defenders, X amount of midfielders, X amount. And if once you've got the spaces filled, once if someone good comes along, that's just unlucky.
Yeah, great questions. So the first part of your question with regards to how we find them or they find us, recruiting international student-athletes is not too dissimilar from the club football environment where players have agents, agents make contact, all that kind of stuff. There are tons, an endless number of these recruiting businesses who have players and families as clients who help connect them with schools in America and bridge that gap. And so for us as coaches, building relationships with the ones that you trust is huge. There are a lot of ones that they will just send a kid anywhere and they'll give them all good recommendations, whether or not they're good football players, whether or not they actually know the family and they can speak for the character of the player or the quality of their academics. And then there's these other recruiting services that get to know the players, they get to know the families, they invest time and energy in that. And then when you have a conversation, they're frank and honest, and they'll tell you if a player is going to come into your program and be a superstar, come in your program and be a supporting player, a role player. Those honest recruiting services make all the difference, and those are the ones that we as college coaches keep going back to, because then we know what to expect from the recruits we bring in. Unfortunately, we don't have the same ability to get to know an international recruit like we might a domestic recruit whose home we can visit or who we can watch play three or four times in a spring season. It's different, and so those relationships and that trust are very foundational in recruiting internationals. And so it's a bit like the club market in that environment where there are agents and there are players that work with those agencies in a way. International recruits do find you as well. Our school is one of the highest percentages of international students of any school in the United States. And so we do get a lot of international applicants anyways who don't work with agencies or who, you know, maybe someone from their city or their town or their village attended school or had a relative who attended the school and they're looking to do the same. And, you know, word gets passed around that they had a relative or a neighbor or someone who really enjoyed their experience. And so you might get reached out to by those people as well. So that's another advantage that our school has over others I've worked at in the past, is that we do have a very good reputation for international students specifically. And then to building out a roster, whether it's with international students or domestic students, I think it very much, that's going to depend on the coach's preference, and it's going to depend on the roster within those that coach's preferences. So for me, I'm the type of person, I'm very competitive. I am hard-pressed to say no to a good person and a good footballer. If someone is going to make us better, that is someone I'm going to try to move heaven and earth to create a path for them to join our program. unfortunately, sometimes it means that might displace a player or two. But in the world of competitive college athletics, then that's up to that person to compete for and fight for their spot. And that makes them better. And then that makes our program better, because now all of a sudden we've got more competitive depth. So there have been good players that I've said no to because we have an abundance of players, but usually that's because they're on par with what our current players are bringing us. If someone is significantly better and can bring more to the table, then I think you'd be silly to say no. Now, there's another thing that's a consideration for me specifically within my college program. Is one of the things that I love recruiting is players who can play multiple positions. I love recruiting multi-sport athletes, which is relatively common in the United States. We do not specialize in sports at a particularly young age over here. And I love recruiting players that play multiple positions, which, again, they're, because we don't have the same youth to professional pathway over here, our footballers, because college athletics kind of bridges the gap between the youth club sports and then the professional sports. Players play more positions because they play for more coaches, for more teams and academies year on year. And so there's a little bit more of a flexibility when it comes to learning a new position and playing a new position over here for American players than I have seen in a lot of English and European players who come to play over here, who've maybe only been in one position for the past 7, 8, 9 years. I love recruiting from Dutch academies because a lot of those players have been coached in so many positions. And what that affords is, if you do then get that really, really good last minute recruit who's going to put someone out of a role, if that player is adaptable, they can play somewhere else in the field for you. And you can have your best 11 on the field. Even if someone is in what would be their secondary or tertiary position, you still get your best 11 on the field. And so it can only serve to benefit you, I think, to bring those types of people in and to be honest with the players that you do have and say, you know, we have someone coming in who's competitive, who plays your same position. So this is a chance for you to elevate your game, to improve, to challenge for your minutes, or be adaptable and find another route on the field.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is our SLB Sports Roundup, featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, motorsport and football. We start with golf. The PGA Tour held the Travelers Championships from the TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut. It was won by Xander Schauffele, the highest ranked player not to have won a tournament in the 20s. He hasn't won since 2019, and he was sort of gifted it this week. He had a brilliant 4 days, don't get me wrong. He was leading pretty much every day and led into the final round, but sort of struggled a little bit and was struggling to fight off the challenge of Sahith Tigala. However, Tigala came down the last and 72nd hole at minus 20, one shot clear of Xander Schauffele, and he put his drive into the bunker, took three to get out, and triple bogeyed the hole, leaving Xander Schauffele coming down the last one shot clear. Having said that, Xander did birdie the hole, so all credit to him and a fantastic win. As I said, second place was Sahith Tigala on minus 17, joined by JT Poston. This week, they've got the John Deere Classic from the TPC Deer Run at Silvis, Illinois. On the European Tour, it was the BMW International Open at the Golf Club München Eichenried in Münzingen, Germany. It was won in a playoff by Haitung Lee, threatening to win for a while. He led going into the third round, stumbled but fought back brilliantly to win on minus 21, beating Thomas Peters of Belgium in a playoff, one place back to Ryan Fox, who was our selection, who was minus 5 on the final day but left his final run a bit too late. This week it's the Irish Open from Mount Juliet in Thomastown, County Kilkenny. The week before, the Open, the oldest and the greatest championship in golf. Both the PGA Tours and the European Tour will be hosting that event in 2 weeks' time. The LPGA saw one of their majors with the PGA Championship, held at the Congressional Blue Course in Belhusa, Maryland. It was won by Korean IG Chung on minus 5. Another rollercoaster performance, 12 under after two rounds and halfway through the tournament, destroying the field. Plus 4 round 3, and at one point, plus 4. Also in the final round, taking her back to 4 under, and she was passed by American sensation and sweetheart, Lexi Thompson. But Lexi failed yet again, dropping 3 shots in the final 4 holes to go back to minus 4. Joint with Minji Lee, our selection, and IG Chun managed to birdie the 17th with a great putt to win the title by a stroke. She fully deserved it despite those wobbly moments. They're back in 2 weeks' time on July the 13th with the Dow Great Lakes Invitational from Midland Country Club. Horse racing, and we witnessed history last week. Not only last week did our good friend, supporter and ambassador Holly Doyle become the first woman to win the French Oaks aboard the amazing filly Nashua. This week, she created history again. Her and her brilliant and willing partner Trushan became the highest weight carrier of the Northumberland Plate, carrying 10 stone 8 to victory over the 2 mile trip in an unbelievable performance. Well done, Holly. Well done, Alan King. And especially well done to Trushan. We fancied him for the Ascot Gold Cup the week before, but the rains didn't come and he loved the all-weather surface. What a superstar he is. It was also the Irish Derby, and it was won by Derby third, Westover, who was unlucky to not finish second behind Desert Crown Epsom. A stunning performance, all power, stamina and ability. He went over to Ireland and won for Colin Keane, who replaced Rob Hornby on board. Whether that's fair or not, it's down to the owners, and a nice win for Rafe Beckett, the trainer. But despite this being a classic, the weekend was all about Holly Doyle yet again. Races to look out for: the Eclipse, a brilliant all-aged Grade 1 held at Sandown. We think it's between Verdini, the French Derby winner, Native Trail, runner-up in the Guineas, got back to form in the Irish Guineas, and Bay Bridge, who we thought was a little bit unlucky in the Prince of Wales Stakes at Royal Ascot. We like Native Trail. We've liked him for a long time. We think he might need some soft ground, but we like him a lot. Also, some more long-range races. The July Cup. One of our friends from Royal Ascot, Perfect Power, is going for the July Cup over 6 furlongs. We think he'll win that, and he's still a decent price. And in the Falmouth Stakes, not so much a great price, but in Spiral. Ridden to win by Frankie Dettori at Royal Ascot on his last winner for the Gosden team. They've now taken a sabbatical. We think it's very harsh on Frankie. He's 51. Perhaps his age doesn't fit the profile now. But it will be in great demand, and we think Frankie will be even better. Who will ride in Spiral? We don't know. But we're confident she'll win the Falmouth Stakes on the 8th of July. On to cricket. Two formats to report on. England beat the Netherlands, unsurprisingly 3-0 in the one-day internationals. Joss Butler, man of the series, brilliant with the bat. And in the test matches, it's the third and final test, England-New Zealand. 2-0 to England. England closing in on a brilliant 3-0 win. Let's hope they can keep their nerve on the final day. The third test at Headingley. New Zealand won the toss and batted with 3-2-9. Another century for Daryl Mitchell, who's had a brilliant, brilliant series over here despite losing. Jack Leach getting a fifer. England replied with 360, a dazzling century from Johnny Bairstow. And on his debut, bowler Craig Overton scoring 97 and falling just 3 short. New Zealand responded with 329, another good innings for Mitchell, but this time only a 50. Another fifer for Jack Leach, getting 10 for the match, the first time He's got that in Test cricket and at Headingley, which isn't known for spinning. And England closed day four with one day left on 183 for two, with the main man Joe Root still there. Just 113 runs to win with 8 wickets standing. If they do things correctly, it should be a 3-0 win. This weekend, we actually see the start of the 6th and final test against India. Why am I sounding so shocked? Well, the series happened last year during COVID. It was 2-1 to India with one test to go. And their manager, Ravi Shastri, went out for a book signing, come back and brought COVID into the camp. And the test was cancelled. England complained that they could have played it. India should forfeit because it was a book signing, not contracted by some other means. And the ICC decided the test should be replayed. So we've strangely got the final test of the series against India this weekend, 1 year later. England are in great form. Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes have got them playing confidently, and they've got them winning matches from positions they might not be winning them from. We like England. We fancy England to take the match and make it 2-2 in the series. On to tennis, and it's the third major of the season, and it's Wimbledon, at the home of tennis, on the grass. In the men's, we're looking at Novak Djokovic, because no Roger Federer. Rafa Nadal's got that chronic foot injury which could even enforce his retirement. But look out for Matteo Berrettini, the rising Italian, who could easily take the crown. But we think it's left open for Novak. And on the ladies, how can you go against current world number one and 35 tournament streak unbeaten, Iga Swiatek? She looks likely to take the women's crown, although we want to see her play a little bit more on grass, but we think she'll win. Outsiders to look out for: up-and-coming youngsters, Corey Gauff from America and Ons Jabeur from Holland, and also those good old stagers, Simona Halep, and not quite so old, but been around for a while, Yelena Ostapenko. Look out for them as well. But we're going to go for Djokovic-Swiatek double at Wimbledon. On to motorsport. And the MotoGP was held at Assen in Holland last weekend, with Francesco Bagnaia for the Ducati Lenovo team winning and taking 25 points. Marco Bezzecchi from the VR46 Racing team, owned by Valentino Rossi, taking second and 20 points. And third place Maverick Vinales, Aprilia Racing team, taking 16 points. Fabio Quartararo leads the standing still for Monster Energy Yamaha on 172 points. Clear of another guy who didn't finish in the top three yesterday, Alexia Spargo from Aprilia on 151. And third place, also out the podium places at the weekend, Johan Zarco, Ducati Pramac Racing, 114. The World Superbikes are back on the 15th to the 17th of July with the Great Britain Round, Round 5 from Donington. Alvaro Bautista for Team Ducati Aruba IT leads the standings on 220 points. Second place, Jonathan Rea, six-time world champion for Team Kawasaki, on 184. Third place, current world champion, Toprak Ratsakalioglu for Team Yamaha on 141. British Superbikes are back on the 22nd to the 24th of July, now in their summer break, at Brands Hatch using the Grand Prix circuit. Bradley Ray for the OMG Racing Yamaha team leads the standings on 216. Second place, Jason O'Halloran for McCann's Yamaha on 200. Third place, Leon Jackson for the FS3 Kawasaki team on 174. Last weekend was round four of the Speedway Grand Prix from Gorzów in Poland, and it was won by Dane Anders Thompson. He won and claimed 20 points. Martin Vakulik from Poland was second, 18 points. And third place, Bartosz Szmarslik, the two-time world champion, on 16 points. All three ride for the home track at the Edward Jankar circuit in the Polish league. Bartosz Szmarslik leads the standings on 78 points, extending that lead over Leon Madsen, who had a neck injury but still took part. He's from Denmark, 60 points. Third place, join Martin Vakulik and Maciej Janowski, both Polish, 53 points. NASCAR, and it was the Ali 400 from Nashville Super Speedway, and it was won by Chase Elliott for the Chevy Camaro team and Hendrix Motorsport. He gained 50 points. Second place, Kurt Busch for Toyota Camry for the 23XI Racing team, 42 points. Third place, Ryan Blaney, Ford Mustang for Team Penske, 44 points. Chase Elliott for Hendrix Motorsport leads the standings on 586. 30 points clear of his team, Hendrix Motorsport teammate, Ross Chastain. Third place, Ryan Blaney, sneaking into the top three for Ford Mustang and Team Penske. He's on 555, just one further back. This weekend, it's the NASCAR Series Cup race from Road America in Wisconsin. IndyCar, They're back this week with the Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio. The standings are led by Chip Ganassi Racing's Indy 500 winner Marcus Ericsson on 293. Will Power for Team Penske is second on 266, 5 points clear of his Team Penske teammate Joseph Newcarden, who is on 261. Formula E is back also this week around the streets of Marrakesh with the Morocco E-Prix, and the standings are led by Stoffel van Dorn for the Mercedes EQ team on 121 points. Jean-Eric Vergne is second for the DS Chitita team on 116, two ahead of Eduardo Mortara, who drives for Rokit Venturi Racing. Formula One is also on again this weekend with the British Grand Prix at the home of motorsport at Silverstone. I'm not sure if Lewis Hamilton can get a British victory, but he did look better last time out. However, the standings are now being dominated by Red Bull. The flying Max Verstappen, the current world champion, is out in front on 175 points. Second place Sergio Perez, his teammate, on 129. And three back for longtime leader, who's now slipped back to third due to mechanical issues, Charles Leclerc of Ferrari. This means Red Bull are dominating the constructors as well. They're in front on 304. Second place Ferrari on 228. Being closed down surprisingly by Mercedes, who are just 40 behind on 188. We finish off with football, and it's the Women's Euros. Please look out for our previews, for our match reviews, and also our watch-alongs. We think it's between two teams, the home girls of England, the Lionesses, Manchester United players Ella Toon, Alessia Russo, and Mary Earps. And also don't forget Lucy Bronze, Alex Greenwood, Fran Kirby, and loads of good players. England have a great chance. And then you've got Spain. One of their players is our friend off the show, Onabacha, also playing for Manchester United. We know it's going to be a great tournament. We think if you follow Spain and England, you're going to go close to winning. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, the end of another fantastic show. A special with Sam Thomas, coach at Principia College. Last time we spoke to Sam, he just got his dream job back at the college he'd graduated, where he was now head coach of their soccer team. In the last few weeks, he's built his squad, he's moved house, he found out what it's like to be a head coach, he's been talking to players, and I hope part one of his interview just showed you how busy he is and what an amazing job he does and how interesting his daily life is. Thank you also to Johan, Raffaella and the team for giving us this platform, and mainly to you, the viewers, the listeners. We thank you very much. Look out for some more great content, catch-ups with Anna Hopkin, catch-ups with Holly Doyle, some young footballers and also some professional footballers, and Molly Campbell about her golf and much, much more. We look forward to bringing you some great content in the future, and thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. Defying the laws of gravity, I'm a racing car.